I think back to my young and odier days when I was softer and more receptive to the lessons of life.
Yeah.
And all my old friends, Chugger and Lil Sniffs and Big Ham Ham.
What?
And how I thought about them and I remember them so much. I have such nostalgia for those times.
Were those your stuffed animals?
Yeah. Lil Ham Hand or Big Ham Hand.
You were softer when you were a kid?
And odier, yeah. Do you guys feel that way?
Yes.
Tell us more about Ham Hand.
Welcome to Yak Babies.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Yeah, welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast sponsored by Big Holes in the Ground. Big Holes in the Ground where you get lost. My name is Aaron, I'm here with my personal pals, Dave.
Babies.
Brick.
Hey.
Oh, wow. Very brusque. And personal pal calling in from overseas, the land of fun and luck, right? Nico.
I like how long it took you to come up with anything.
Because I was trying hard to say leprechauns.
Fun and luck.
That's what Ireland's known for, right? Fun and luck.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. If that's another word for uncontrollable alcoholism and gambling parlors on every corner, right?
We're talking nostalgia. Brick, tell us about this topic a little bit.
Well, in my odier days, I use real words. You just snarfed some tequila, didn't you? Yeah. How's that burn? It's in his nose.
It's gonna burn.
Oh. God. Okay.
Better?
Yeah.
We were talking a while back, and it occurred to me that a large factor in... Oh, man.
What?
A cloud of tequila over here.
Oh. Sorry.
Wow. A big factor in like how I choose what to read or watch or play is based on stuff I liked when I was a kid. You know, not necessarily re-experiencing those things, though I do plenty of that, and looking up old books and reading them again for the first time in however many years. But we also see a big, you know, there's like everything is 80s everything now, right?
Right.
Things like Stranger Things or whatever else. But that stuff does appeal to me, and it clearly appeals to a lot of people.
I think there are two forces here. One is cultural nostalgia, where things like Stranger Things, or there's a book published recently, I can't remember which one it was now or the title, but it had, the cover was like a very 70s style font. It was like 70s like hardcover book font. That kind of nostalgia was what is seems to be sort of, like I said, cultural and like a marketing tactic. And the other force, which is internal, the thing that I think is really common, where at some point in your 30s, you stop seeking out new material, right?
Right.
For music, it happened with me really quickly.
Yeah.
Where I also stopped listening to new bands. I was like, I just kind of listen to old stuff and the bands I liked when I was a kid, and then like going deeper into the 70s and 60s, yeah, as opposed to staying on the cutting edge of music and being like hip with what's cool. So I think there's two versions of that.
Yeah. Which one? I mean, I think it's kind of a blend of the two, right? I think I also, you know, I trend towards reading older books. I always have. So the books is a little weird for me because I tend to read much older books. Like I prefer things from much earlier in the 20th century or the 19th century.
Right.
Just generally. But for TV and games and stuff, I tend to want to watch, I'd much rather watch MacGyver, right, reruns or play Super Nintendo games than I would the hot new thing.
But you do keep up with recent TV and games, though.
I tend to gravitate more towards the things that then play into that other aspect of that, right? Where like, you know, I'm only going to see a couple like new movies a year.
Right.
Right. The one movie I've seen in the theater is a remake of it.
Yeah.
It's the first movie I've seen in the theater in probably a year.
I was going to throw that in. It's like a tsunami of remakes.
Yeah.
In our culture now.
And maybe part of it is that's what we're being fed.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm sure there's plenty of brand new movies that I would like, but that's just not what I pick.
Yeah, I think that's true. Book-wise, the hottest or like most maybe sort of like notable new book is Margaret Atwood's sequel to Handmaid's Tale, right? Which just came out and it's called something while I look it up. So even sort of publishing is still being touched by this sequel craze, right? The remake craze.
Yeah, remakes don't really work for books.
The Testaments is what it's called.
Right.
But the sequel or the, you know, like the breathing new life into, like turning a book into a franchise or a series or something seems to be more and more prevalent.
But that seems to be like a mostly financial decision, like because sequels and remakes have a built-in audience already.
Right.
Instead of right, but something I mean, new.
At least they assume that's the
case. Because it has that built-in audience doesn't guarantee that they're... I imagine Disney will probably start seeing...
I think.
Well, for a while, right? If Disney turns out a bunch of crappy live-action movies, people are going to stop going, I would assume. Like, there'll always be parents that bring their kids to the movies, but it's not necessarily... I think it's not a guarantee that people are going to like things that are 80s themed in 20 years. We'll probably start seeing a shitload of neon zigzag 90s.
Oh, you're already seeing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure all that stuff will move around.
Yeah. I guess that, like, a lot of that, too, is, like, the people that are making stuff now grew up in the 80s and 90s. So maybe there is a little bit of a kind of a, like, I would assume, like, something like Stranger Things, which isn't technically a remake, is more somebody who grew up in the 80s.
Yes.
Yeah, trying to recapture that kind of E.T. feel.
That feels more sincere than, like, Fuller House, which is just right. a continuation of Full House spearheaded by Stamos, right? That's his, right. like, pet project to get money to, like, capitalize on his one famous right. thing.
Or what jumps to mind for me is, well, like...
And the Beach Boys.
Like, you're talking about, like, book sequels. Is that a sequel that Harper Lee wrote of To Kill a Mockingbird, right?
Yeah, Ghost at a Watchman.
Like, talk about a cash grab. Like, I mean, who knows how much she was actually in charge of that and how much it was just a snow job. Well,
turns out not a lot.
It seems like, yeah, like that was very sinister, right?
Elder abuse situation.
Yeah.
Right. I think we were envisioning her cutting her own hair with garden shears or something in a previous episode. Let's attack this from a personal angle, though. What do you get out of rereading stuff from your youth? Is it a comfort thing? Is it maybe some sort of a discontent?
I think it's a comfort thing, and I also think it sort of connects to, this is something we've talked about before, when we talked about how we choose what to read next or whatever it was called. I hate having my time wasted as I get older.
Yeah.
And I'm fairly certain that I'm going to
die.
Like, there's a pretty high probability I'm going to like a remake of something or a return to something that I enjoyed when I was a kid.
I
don't know about that.
Well, I think there's a higher probability that I'm going to like it than, I don't know, but if I don't like those things, I still have value in it because I have that experience of the comparing and the
right.
whatever else, right? It's not just like, I watched a movie and it sucked. I'll never think about this movie again. Then I can start thinking about like how much I liked the old one better. And like I enjoy, we talked about this a little bit with the movie adaptations one, where like I kind of like the experience of comparing them, even if the later entry or remake or whatever isn't as good. There's some enjoyment to be had in that.
Right.
In that evaluation, I think. Particularly if it's something that you were really fond of as a younger person. Right. You know?
Well, here's an example that's come up recently. So I think last week or maybe this week it was announced that Gary Larson has come back to The Far Side, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we talked about Far Side in a recent episode talking about newspaper comics and humor and literature. And Dave, you said you were a huge Far Side fan.
Yes, I absolutely love The Far Side. I will sit and read through an entire book of that and just laugh.
Yeah. Huh. So does the news of Gary Larson returning to Far Side fill you with... like excitement or dread or some combination of the two?
It's a good question. I guess my first instinct was excitement.
Mm.
Yeah.
But if it sucks, then what does that do to my enjoyment of his previous work or like rereading through that stuff? I doubt it would affect it very much.
Far Side's a weird example. And like if this ever happens with Calvin and Hobbes, it would be the same.
Yeah.
Where like that dude retired when he was like 35.
Right.
So it's not like there's been 30 years of Far Side really losing its he left on top.
Yeah.
And then he's got 20 something years. Like I doubt he's done nothing for 20 years, you know? So one, there's a lot of extra time for him to curate whatever he's working on. And two, all that fatigue in the middle isn't there.
Right.
Right. So he has, you know, if the Far Side comes in and is relatively, you know, sharp in how it kind of lampoons whatever it is going on with modern society, the old ones did, you know what I mean? Like he's got, it'll feel fresh just from the lack of content for that long a period of time, you know? But if he's sat around getting wasted for 20 years and his brain's mushy, he's lost his touch, then if it's not good, it's not going to be good. But I think just from a sort of experience perspective, the absence of it for so long.
Yeah.
Would work in its favor.
No, I think.
How old is he now? He's like 50 something. He's not. it's not like he's, you know, like an out of touch 90-year-old that's like, you know, Charles Schultz doodling one last Charlie Brown on his deathbed or whatever. It's like, he, you know, he's relatively middle-aged.
Yeah, see,
yeah, we got Aaron looking it up. I think if his brain is mush and the new thing sucks, then I'll just kind of shrug my shoulders and pick up an old collection and be content with that.
He's 69.
Oh, then he was older than I thought he was. I thought he and Watterson both like retired when they were pretty young.
I mean, Farsi's been gone for a long time, so that's still relatively young. If he's 69 now, if he's been gone for 20 years, right, that's still relatively young.
Yeah.
So if he retired when he was 49.
Yeah. Nico, you said you disagree. Tell us more.
Well, like when Brick, when you mentioned like being gone for a long time, I think so for me personally, if there's something that I like enough to kind of revisit every couple years, then that's kind of maintains a little bit like a connection to it. But if I get too nostalgic about something that's been too far gone, then usually if I go back to it, it's completely ruined. And not only is my opinion of it ruined, but my memories of it are then ruined. So now I just tend to like Brick, you mentioned MacGyver, and like I used to love MacGyver. We would watch MacGyver every week when I was a kid. We would it was the one night a week we could watch TV while we were eating dinner, and it was great. MacGyver and the A-Team. And then when they kind of released all of those episodes on some whatever service, CBS or whatever, I went back and watched it, and I was like, this is garbage. Like, no wonder I liked it when I was 12, because this is like, not only does it look like shit because it's 30 years old, but it's completely absurd. Like, the guy isn't nearly as clever as I thought he was. Like, and every part of it was like, well, now that I'm an adult, it's kind of ruined for me.
Right. So it colors the way that you sort of hold those memories. So when you look back at your 12-year-old self, it's kind of a different picture now than it was before you rewatched it.
And so now I try to avoid going back to things just for nostalgia, because I just want to leave them as memories and like have the memories and be like, all right, cool. Yeah. That was a great show when I was 12. No, I don't want to see it again. No, I don't want to, you know.
Right.
But you will reread books that you've liked. So is there like, where's the line there? Is there any kind of way to make the distinction between a book that you read, say, 5 years ago that you're rereading now? Like, that's not nostalgia, right? Is that just...
No, I think...
You're revisiting a book you know you like?
Yeah. I would think that, for one thing, if it hasn't been too long since I've gone back to it, then I have a more kind of realistic memory of it, as opposed to things that when I was a kid that, like, I loved. And all I basically remember is the love for it. I don't really remember what it was like.
Is that how you define where that line is?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily, like, everything I would go back to I would hate. But I think it's a crapshoot compared to the like, kind of nostalgic memory of it.
I think you're more vulnerable in nostalgia. Nostalgia has an emotional component to it, right? It's, like, not just looking to the past. It's looking to the past where you felt certain things and trying to refeel them, or at least do something with those emotions, right? So by doing that, you're inherently more vulnerable to talking to your younger self and you know, figuring out what matters to that person.
But those things are also colored by your present self.
Totally.
I mean, for example, Nico at 12 years old, maybe you were sitting at dinner watching MacGyver with your family thinking, fuck, I can't wait till the show is over. I just want to go up in my room and...
Right.
You know, do whatever you might have been doing at 12.
Crank off
alone in your room, right?
With Mr. Hammond.
My God,
that's not where I intended this.
Filling
to go,
up a big hole in the ground.
Thank God that memory had already been ruined, because you would have just ruined it. But yeah, it's kind of like that thing, you know, where you hear a song or something and you remember like the first time you heard it, or something like where like the memory is so connected to it that you always think about that kind of thing. And then if that song gets, if like part of that gets soured, then it sours the other part of it, you know, like, so if you're listening to a song and you're, I mean, it can work both ways. Like, so if you kind of listen, a song makes you remember like a girlfriend or something, and then you break up, then you hear the song, then it, you know, it spoils the song too. You know, it goes kind of both directions. But for me, it definitely, it can also, if I no longer like the song or the TV show or the book, then it can spoil the memory of it.
Yeah. I think that literature to me is the least susceptible to nostalgia, I think, at least in my personal experience. Like music, the most probably. And then like smell and flavor, a lot more so. And then literature, least. I remember times I read books that I loved for sure, like Goodbye Columbus, for instance, or even Portnoy's Complaint. I remember reading those in a very specific time and place.
Right.
But I don't, if I were to pick up Goodbye Columbus today, it wouldn't be like, oh, I'm back in 2005 in that first apartment in San Antonio. It wouldn't be the same feeling.
Well, there's an extra layer.
Did I ruin that for you too?
Yeah, I just think of you.
Yeah.
There's an extra layer of processing.
Yes.
Right.
It's also time too, right? I think like the time it takes to read a book is a bit longer than hearing a song. It's over so quickly that you can sort of focus those emotions more acutely rather than sort of spread them out over 2 weeks of reading a book, maybe?
What about watching a season of a TV show?
I don't know.
Like, same amount of time?
But one episode would be 30 minutes or an hour.
I guess it depends on the show.
Yeah, if you binge it, that's different.
Yeah.
I definitely probably go back to TV shows more than anything else if they're easy to watch.
Really?
Just because, like, yeah, you can watch something while you're cooking or whatever. You know, like, it doesn't have to be, like, front of mind the way reading a book does.
Don't you read books while you're cooking?
Yeah.
I like the, it doesn't bother me if I go back to, like, obviously if I go back and it just sucks and it's boring, then I'm not going to keep going back to it. It doesn't really ruin the memory for me.
Yeah.
But like, I like going back to things and kind of being like, oh, this is super cheesy.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can kind of, you, it's almost like you enjoy the same thing differently. I watched MacGyver like a week ago. I loved it. Right. It's stupid as hell. Everyone's got mullets and they talk funny and he's not as clever as you'd think him to be. And the music cues are super cheesy.
Yeah.
But there's something about it that's pleasing.
Yeah.
And it might be something about the watching it more than actual the content of the show. I don't know.
So how about Aaron and Dave? What do you guys, do you guys seek out like books that you read when you were a kid or shun them?
Not really. I mean, there's a episode coming up or in the past or somewhere in the feed about rereading books that we'll talk about this in a bit more depth. I don't reread that often, but my nostalgia, I think, it's more the version of nostalgia where I seek out things that are new that are just kind of the same old things.
Like comic books.
In style, or was it?
Like comic books.
I mean, yeah, kind of.
I mean, comic books have to be like kind of nostalgic, right? Like, because they're...
Certainly, and especially, you know, I make no bones about liking superhero comics, and I won't apologize for that, but that is definitely a childish impulse, right? Liking superheroes is not, you know, you don't come to that as an adult and be like, yeah, superheroes now. It's sort of ties to a childish or a child's vision of the world, I guess. And one that I don't find problematic, but it is definitely that. Like Dybbuk, for instance, reading Stuart Dybbuk, you know, is so tied to nostalgia. But if I'm seeking out new fiction, I might find something that sort of kind of feels similar or like that, which is, if not nostalgia, sort of like almost like a style ossification, right? Where I find myself settling into a version of text that I like to read or consume that is familiar versus groundbreaking or new. And I would say that if not for all of you in this podcast, I probably wouldn't read any contemporary fiction at all.
I wonder, I know we're kind of running out of time, but I wonder how much of this is getting old, which I think is a lot of it.
Totally.
But I wonder how much of this is just the sheer mass of available content in the world, right? Like in the 80s and even in the 90s, you had more cable channels, I guess. But I mean, your pool of available TV watching was limited.
Yeah.
Right? The amount of books published per month had to be much lower.
Yeah.
And then the availability to you, it was no Amazon or Barnes and Nobles. You got what your library got, and they got probably the New York Times bestsellers and a bunch of new kids books. And that's what they had.
Your library, your Walden books. Yeah.
Yeah. So the act of choosing, you know, like, I think we all probably have some pretty good memories of going to a video store, right? And it felt like a lot, but it was really just, you know, a big room with, and you pick things off the wall.
Right.
The difference between that and the literally infinite, you could spend 12 hours scrolling through Amazon Prime and never see something repeat twice, you know? And it's like, that just, it just becomes overload. And it's just like, fuck it. I'm going to go with what I know.
Yeah.
You know, and I wonder how much of that plays into it. And this sort of, we have this ability to really curate the filters around our content much more than we did even, you know, 10 years ago, let alone longer.
Yeah, absolutely. A friend of mine said this a long time ago, and I think he's absolutely right. Our generation, there was no great war to like unify our memories, right? Like, as opposed to a previous generation or maybe two generations ago, the quote-unquote greatest generation, whatever.
Fuck them.
bound by their experiences in World War II or Vietnam. We don't have that. And so our great war is our childhood, right? And sort of the experiences of growing up are the things that unify you. And like that binds our generation together is like shared cultural experiences through media.
Yeah. Well, what's really fucked about that is we did have one. We just were watching TV and not.
But it was voluntary, right? It wasn't conscripted. So whereas in World War II, everyone went, or Vietnam, everyone went.
Fair enough.
Not everyone, but like a lot of people went. So.
I had bone spurs.
Right. You could opt not to go to, I don't know, the Gulf if you didn't want to. But everyone went to see Lord of the Rings. So that's the kind of thing that sort of groups that generation together in a weird way.
Yeah. And so now we look for things maybe that make us think of those childhoods.
Yeah, in the way that old soldiers might reunite and talk about their war memories.
Right. So like Freaks and Geeks making
Yeah,
right.
I mean, I think there was still that kind of thing, like ever since there's been TV, at least I think there's still been like there's like before we were really watching TV, there was the Who Killed JR thing, and there was like those kind of TV and the end of MASH or whatever, you know, that people talk about. I don't know if that's quite the same as it's a war.
But I guess you're right. But I think that the difference maybe between those events and now is the cults around them. I'm not sure that there were boomers who were cosplaying as JR 10 years later and sort of building their identity around that, right? Whereas now a big subsection of, you know, media consumers construct their identity around their fandoms. This is, we discussed this before at length.
Many times.
To a troubling degree, right? That association and connection to those properties, I think, is exaggerated in a way that it wasn't before.
And commodified.
Totally. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think back now and those memories seem less odie. my time seems less soft, and the image of Big Ham Hand fades a little bit, and I can't quite make out his features, the hamminess of his hand or the bigness of it, and little sniffs, that giant nose. It seems smaller now.
Were all your stuffed animals pigs?
These are friends I had.
Real friends.
Yeah.
Were they pigs?
Wait, yeah. you actually had a friend named Hamhead?
Hamhands and Ham Little Hand. Sniffs?
Yeah. Aaron, was it?
Sure.
No wonder you love the ham horn so much.
You?
He just had three mirrors.
Follow us on Twitter.
I'm nostalgic for the time from before when this bit started.
Return to a time when Odie is still not a word.
It was so much simpler back then.
You can email us at yakbabiespodcast@gmail.com. Go to patreon.com/yakbabies, and for $1, you can access to all of our bonus content. There's so much happening on the Patreon. I want to stress this to all our listeners. $1, not that much, right?
Literary author draft.
Oh my God, literary author draft is so good. It's two episodes. So we did a literary power, author draft and power hour at the same time. Lots of fun happening there. Really great revelations in the world of literature and drinking. Horror draft from last year.
Horror.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to call it the scary draft from now on.
Patreon is full of goodies.
The horror draft is something we...
We should probably do that, too.
It became a bonus episode. It's definitely out there. And like I said, only $1 to get access to all that. So check it out. Until then, Yak Babies yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to send an extra thank you to everyone who listens regularly, and especially to those who have supported on Patreon, past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, and William Howard Taft. Thank you.
love.